Chapter 6. Evaporation. What exactly had evaporated? And what would evaporate? The few friends I had? Gone. Meadows? Already withered. The school itself? Slowly changing. Old rooms refurbished, others boarded up. But I wasn't dealing with a mere physical absence. After 3 years with Susan, I'd soon have to face whatever lay beyond. Or, in more specific terms, secondary school. Compared to much of the rest of what life has in store for us, it's a familiar, orderly movement. Children grow up. Moving to a bigger school is part of that ordeal. But for me, at age 10, it seemed a hellish destination. Potential school bullies, flung into the maddening rush on the stairs, and possibly a worse version of Susan. I knew an abyss was forming. I'd have to jump to the next stage in life. Besides, could I survive another year at White Mountain? These were all subconscious thoughts and too much for a 10-year-old. My bus was replaced with a crammed cab. The escort I'd known for 5 years moved on. All my friends left. Suddenly, I was the oldest and the only verbal child there. Concentrate hard and listen to the radio, or suffer ear-piercing shrieking and dodge the uncontrolled flapping of hands, which never made for a pleasant journey. Beyond that, these children were a reminder. Whereas my time in primary school had almost elapsed, theirs was just beginning. For now, I watched the cars, head pressed against the window in a tiny cab. Kids in America by Kim Wilde played in the background, barely audible over infantile screeching. It's a wonder I never got slapped accidentally. At least video games awaited me at home. I struck a deal with Susan to avoid the playground. I'd agree to choose classmates and they'd hang out with me at lunchtime. I made them laugh and enjoyed it when they did, but never had the courage to form a lasting friendship beyond the moment Susan put us together. Mostly it just got me out of the sensory room, and Susan could say that she helped develop my social skills. Appeasement became my main policy. Making tea for Susan and the other staff was easier than fighting an unwinnable struggle. By the time term was over, I had led two of my peers in writing, directing and performing a chocolate commercial, as well as entering and losing the school Christmas card competition. I also knew the amount of milk Susan preferred in her tea. In the new year, my parents set me up with an occupational therapist near the school. Every Wednesday, Susan and I embarked on a lengthy walk there. Buses were available, but she preferred half an hour down a steep hill. I'd imagine finding money in the street.
"You're not that lucky," Susan laughed.
When the fabled day came, and I found a £5 note, Susan snatched the money from my hands, pocketing it. So much for hot chocolate on a frosty morning expedition. Our new headmistress saw I wasn't meeting the attendance criteria and sent my parents a strongly worded letter. I'd miss a few more days at school than most. Either I would have an appointment to attend or my meagre immune system got into a brutal conflict with a virus. After explaining my diagnosis, Mum and Dad got off with a slap on the wrist. With the SAT exams and secondary school approaching, I suppose it wasn't worth the argument.
"You will go to Crown Heights School," Dad began.
Right, I muttered.
"Don't worry, there's a special needs provision." I crossed and uncrossed my arms and legs, unsure of what position I preferred.
"Autism's a label. It's a passport to places like Meadows."
Yes.
"It's called Portum. I think it's Latin for something. Sounds interesting."
"Yeah." Me, being a miniature scrap of flesh and bone, would not fare well in secondary school. Dad said the other children had threatened to tie him to a flagpole on his first day of year 7. If that were how it was for him without a label, then surely it'd be 100 times worse for me. I suffered a lot of nightmares in the lead-up to my visitation days.
"I need to use the toilet," I begged. "I need to go now."
Susan ignored me, tightening her grip on the sensory room door. I jumped up and down, banged on the door, begged. Despite it all, Susan still sat browsing Facebook. I had two choices.
wet myself and commit social suicide, or relieve myself in a room I hated. A corner selected, lip tightly curled, I chose the second option. Upon discovering it, Susan's eyebrows furrowed.
No! That is totally inappropriate. You do not act like an animal. Do you understand me?
She wrenched me upstairs, bringing me before the headmistress. My explanation of being afraid didn't matter. They made me clean it. By the time I left school that day, it was nearing 5 o'clock. Whilst doing my research for this book, through reading the emails sent to my parents at the time, I learnt that they had already cleaned the floor. The only reason I had to stay after school was to face a consequence.
"We're meeting your teacher for parents' evening," Mum said. "Ask her if I'm a valued member of the class,"
I interjected, words falling out of my mouth.
"Never mind. Is everything all right, darling?" "I'm fine, Mum. Forget it."
"If there's something wrong, you can tell us."
"I'm going upstairs."
I didn't want to go there. Talking to Mum about my inner fears felt like being coddled. Besides, a bigger problem emerged. Susan believed having the word sex in my vocabulary meant I'd been accessing pornography on the internet. I let the word slip during a school day, and Dad ended up in the headmistress's office with the police. Susan and other staff had raised a safeguarding concern and felt Mum and Dad weren't responsible enough parents. Dad had to retell my entire development history before they let him go. "We can't trust the school anymore," he told Mum. I peered through the keyhole, listening in on their conversation.
"It's ridiculous," Mum said. "They pulled you out of work for it." Why would Susan do that? I did nothing wrong.
As I lay in bed that night, I thought back to year four, then further back to Blue House Primary.
Everyone always hates me.
A clenched fist trembled in the air before tears soaked my bedsheets. Would secondary school be the same? The day before my first visit, I had another nightmare. All throughout, I trembled like Oliver Twist asking for more gruel. The school a behemoth, the students giants.
"Are you nervous, Grotty?"
Susan asked.
"Yeah, a bit." You'll be fine. Stand up straight."
She corrected my posture, but it didn't last more than a second.
"Never mind,"
she said, after we climbed about 3 flights of narrow stairs. We arrived at the stair landing. We barely noticed the steps leading to Portum, the school's autism provision. Silhouette portraits of each student on one side, entrance on the other.
"Here we go, Grotty."
Last steps of my life. I glanced around. Though larger than Meadows, it was a mere series of different-sized rooms connected by small corridors. Susan turned me round. Awaiting us was a woman.
"Welcome. We're so very lucky to have you both."
She led us into a common room, referred to, quite literally, as the kitchen, because that was what it was. Really, it doubled as both common room and kitchen, being a large enough area for the students to eat lunch and socialise. A sliding door led to a garden. In reality, a bit of fake grass, pots with withered soil and a punching bag. The woman introduced herself as Charlotte, offering me chocolate muffins and pineapple juice.
"Your parents said they're your favourite."
I scoffed down a mouthful.
"Well, Grotty, what do you say?" Thank you,
I muttered in between mouthfuls.
"Good enough,"
Susan said listlessly.
"Right, would you like me to tell you about Portum?"
Charlotte asked. I gave a late nod. "We named all the rooms after famous people with autism," she said. "Turing, Einstein." She listed them all. "And the pieces of artwork littering the walls? All made by students." She regaled me with every detail.
"Nice to meet you,"
I murmured, participating in a sweaty handshake with 2 Portum pupils.
"Please don't kill me."
With a teaching assistant to help them, they would give me a student perspective on Portum, albeit they often talked amongst themselves and forgot about me, quavering in the opposite seat. "I'm sending you off early to avoid the rush on the stairs. Our students don't like it," Charlotte said. "See you next week."
"Run." "Let's go, Susan. I'm tired,"
Fair dues, Grotty. You've had a long day. We both bolted, crowds of screaming teenagers just metres behind us. Do I have to come back? I can't do 5 years here. Next visit, we were in the big room. It had an actual name. But being the largest room in Portum, everyone just called it that. Shabby blue carpet, a table full of art supplies. Various game consoles, DVDs, a television. Inside the room was my cohort. Like me, they were all with their respective TAs. Charlotte left us in the care of Lucas, one of the teaching assistants at Portum. Dad said there were only 4 highly contested places available. Lucas would see me and 3 other boys through a coveted initiation. Lucas explained that every Portum student created a silhouette portrait. In the distant future, when our time at Portum ended, we'd take them with us as a reflection of our journey. One by one, Lucas guided us through the process. He took a picture of our faces, then traced around them. I chose purple for my background, red for the silhouette. Susan raised a tight-lipped frown, observing me and Lucas working together. She tried offering input, but I ignored it. Only when we had finished could she take a picture on her phone. Charlotte smiled, admiring all the portraits. They're so special. This time our cohort left an hour before the crowds flooded out. A welcome change. You're going to have an operation, Dad informed. The doctors want to check your gut.
Oh,
I whispered, biting my lip. Don't worry, it's only for a night. A colonoscopy and an endoscopy. What fun. My last meal was a sandwich from Costa Coffee. Once inside the hospital, they only allowed me to drink water. The aim was to find the cause of my toileting issues. Before the operation, I had to drink a rancid medicine at different points in the day. I jerked it back, eyes scrunched up. Like ingesting acid, it sterilised my tongue. Clutching my stomach, I limped into bed. Though it occurred to me I'd have been better off sleeping on the floor. Concrete sheets, sweltering summer heat. Somehow, Dad and I survived the night.
You're first,
the nurse said.
Shit.
After donning a scratchy hospital gown, I was led downstairs, between walls painted a copious white. Masked doctors forced a plastic mask on my face. I screamed and screamed the harder they pressed. Dad convinced them to delay the operation. There were 3 options, 2 forms of general anaesthetic that would put me to sleep. The sleeping mask I'd already rejected, and a medicine that tasted like sweetened rat poison, or so I imagined. Or a local anaesthetic, a numbing cream they'd give me so I wouldn't feel anything.
Get it over with now, Grandma advised. Then you can put it behind you.
Drenched in sweat, I chose the anaesthetic. Mum and Grandma distracted me with Where's Wally, while the doctors made their investigation. Fortunately, they found nothing wrong. If I had to take a guess, I'd say my difficulties were down to a lack of strength in the muscles. One of the hospital staff suggested Docosate, a laxative. My parents mixed a tasteless liquid form in hot chocolate. I didn't even notice a difference in the taste. And what's more, it worked. For years afterwards, the Docosate did the work my muscles couldn't. I had toilet trained myself, and not a moment too soon. Though I hadn't suffered an accident in some time, I knew I couldn't afford to take any chances in secondary school. July 3rd, 2013. Induction day at Crown Heights School. Outside the gate, Mum had her hands on my shoulders. I grimaced, shaking like a shot pigeon. Shielded under her arms, we went inside. All the teenagers could see me. The tiny boy coddled by his mummy. I bowed my head.
Please don't look at me. Please don't look at me.
Mum left me in Portum, where Charlotte gave me a bowl of Cheerios for breakfast. I scrutinised every student who passed, legs begging to run away.
You were top of school in Year 6, the teacher said, addressing me and other upcoming Year 7s. Now you're at the bottom. Little children all over again.
Little, I'm so fucked.
Inside the den of my fears, there was no choice. I took part in everything.
He's such a trooper, Charlotte told Dad when he collected me.
A brave new world, the current equilibrium left to evaporate. No more therapy. I didn't have to wear glasses. I was toilet trained. No more primary school. No more Susan. Finally, there was time to relax and play Minecraft for the summer. A Lego figure toppled off the shelf. I spun around to find Susan standing in my bedroom.
"Oh, I'm so sorry. I'll put him back up," she said. "How are you, Grotty?"
I'd forgotten she was coming.
"Are you surprised?"
She ordered me downstairs. She had come to help us find a bicycle. If I learnt to ride, it would help my motor skills.
I need to go to the toilet," I blurted, rushing off. "You have 2 minutes," Susan called.
Panting, I locked myself in the bathroom.
No way out.
"It's all about firm structure and boundaries."
"Right, I see," Mum said. "Works with my daughter. You're both too soft with Max. How do you think my parents kept our shop going?" "No choice."
She banged on the door.
"Come on, we have places to be."
With bated breath, I trudged out. She marched Mum and I to the bike shop and back. Nothing came of it. I had no desire to learn. Susan stuck her tongue out, leaving us outside the bus stop.
"Mum, I don't want to see her again, ever." "That's a shame. She really liked you."
I sighed.
"That bitch always threw me in the sensory room. Funny way of showing it."
She didn't understand.
"She understands. She just doesn't care."
An invisible force seized my throat.
"Let's just go home."